I think we began our session. And my name is Germano Strezzi. I'm from Brazil. And we will have today a continuation of a session that we had last Friday, that we deal with liberation theology, a Brazilian view. And so what we wanted to do today is a kind of continue our conversation. And for this, I would like to know how many people were here last Friday. Okay. So for those who were here, we will give a little overview of what we had last Friday for the new ones that are here to understand a little bit what we will speak about today. Today, specifically, we will deal a little bit with base Christian communities, what they are and what they mean. But this is what is important to understand is that the Christian-based communities are a phenomenon that began with the formulation of liberation theology. That is a new theological formulation that started in Latin America in the 50s. It began in the 50s and had the more in theological development during the 60s, and then began to grow, and today is a major theological perspective, not only in Latin America, but also present in other parts of the world. You can find some expression of this theology also here in the United States. Well, what is liberation theology in a few words? It's a theology that tries to relate the gospel of Jesus Christ with the real life of the people, the day-by-day life. They try to ask the question, what the gospel is saying to us today? What does it mean, being a Christian? And what consequences we should take being a Christian? And so this theology is primarily a theology that was developed by lay people. Their practices, their acts, inspired people to reflect the actions, and then they formulate a new theology. The main points of liberation theology, we can say that are, let me see, four points. One is that liberation theologians believe that God is on the side of the oppressed. And why they believe this? Because in the Bible we have this clearly pointed. Two events are very important. The event of the Exodus, where God heard the cry of the people and liberated them of Egypt. And the second one is the event of the cross of Jesus Christ. In the cross we have a clear manifestation or incarnation of God on the side of the oppressed. The second main point is that for liberation theology take part in the process of liberation is also to take part in salvation, because salvation is not something that will happen only in the future, but is happening right now. The other thing that is very important for liberation theology is that we recognize that our theology is a partial theology. What does it mean? That means that we have presuppositions, we are doing theology for determined people, and we recognize this. And what we want other people to do is recognize that their theology is also partial, even if they will say that they are neutral, if they are trying to have to be universal, and to be, their theology will apply for everyone. And we believe that you can't do it. It's impossible. The fourth characteristic, and it will, and this will tie with Christian-based communities, is that liberation theology has a strong emphasis in the lay people, and tries to open the church for the participation of the lay people, not only in a passive way, as opening the church for people coming and attend the service, but also to the people being present in the process of decision, in the process of formulating the theology. And so I think this can give you a little bit of a background that what we discussed last Friday. And the topic for today would be what the base communities represent for liberation theology. After our discussion, a woman came to us and she pointed out a very important point that we forgot to mention, is that why the base communities are so important for liberation theology, and why only now they started. And one of the reasons is that before the Vatican II, the Bible in the Catholic Church, because the liberation theology is began mostly in the Catholic Church, the Bible in the Catholic Church was only in the hands of the priests. And why? Because it was in Latin, and so the people couldn't read the Bible. And with the Vatican II, they decided to begin the translations, and everyone now had the possibility to have the Bible in their hands. And then they began to discuss and to see what the Bible really said. Because before were the priests and bishops and others that would say for the people what was in the Bible. But now what happened is people are saying, no, now we can read and now we can discuss with the priests and others what is there in a more democratic way. I think this is one of a very important point, and I think it's a very similar with the reform with Martin Luther, when he translated the Bible and people began to understand what was there. And so I think it's very, we have some points where we can make some connections. Other point that is very important for Christian-based communities is that they are very ecumenical. Very ecumenical. Even if they started and are very present in the Catholic Church, they are open to everyone that want to struggle with the people who compose the Catholic Church, the base communities. And I think this is a new thing that is happening. Never we had this kind of relationship. Other thing that is very that character give a good picture of base communities is that mostly are poor people who will form a base community. It's very difficult to for us to find a Christian base communities in middle class or other social class. And why this happening? This is because are the poor the only ones that really wanted to change something? Because the others in other classes, they already achieve what they wanted, or when they achieve, they don't want to give up what they have. And so the Christian based communities are primarily communities composed by poor people that not only shared their faith, but they shared also their dream of a new society, a just society, where the wealth and the power is shared with not only among a few, but among more people. And I think this also is very, very interesting. It's very powerful. Other thing that's also important is that base communities not only try, they are not only trying, dreaming with a new society, a more true society, but they also are dreaming with a new church. A church more democratic, where the figure of priest and pastor or bishop are not so powerful, but they, the priest and pastor, are in a ministry, a kind of a different ministry of the lay people, but not as a ministry that has the whole power to decide what will be done or what is right and what is wrong. The priest and the or pastor are servants from the community. And I think, again, you have here a very good example how a Protestant a theological affirmation is present, where the community of all the saints are present here again. They are not concerned only with the growth of the church, but they want to change what's there. I don't know if we could go to some more practical examples. Carlos is a pastor, and he worked in a parish, and they in his parish tried to develop some new project, and maybe you could share some ideas that will illustrate a little bit of what we said about it.
Or maybe if you have a question,
sure.
We would like to open for some questions. Until now, what German said, yeah.
With such terrible inequities in Brazil, for instance, are there other movements going on other than with the church and people?
That's a good question. you have to remember that we had for 21 years a military dictatorship in Brazil. And so any other organization were against the law and were persecuted. And so the only voice who could organize, who could gather people and speak and criticize was the church. It was the only space where the voiceless had voice. That was through the church. Now, since 1 year and a few months ago, the situation changed a little bit, and it's clear that many other movements appeared, like the unions, the labor unions, and other political parties, and other movements like the women against the the high prices of the food, the what we do you know the you understand the word barrio in Spanish, barrio in Portuguese is bairro. Well, you know that the poor mostly live in the bairros, and so the bairros movement are very strong now in Brazil.
What percentage of your people are Catholic?
Well, 90% of the population. Not only in Brazil, but in all Latin America. And so we are a strong minority.
Very pleased with what you're trying to do. I guess my question, though, comes out of given the sinfulness of people and the unwillingness of the powerful to allow things to get out of their control, it seems to me that it is very difficult. Are there within the movement of liberation theology, is there the recognition of the cross as final rather than as always leading to resurrection, if you follow my
yeah.
point there?
Yeah, that's interesting. We wonder that here in the United States, people are saying that the cross is not present in the theology of liberation. But just to give one example, please, I don't want to fight now with this, but if you come to Alden Village, you don't find crosses. When you just arrive, you see a big flag of the United States. But you don't see crosses. We have one cross, well, that's not exactly a cross, but we have another one at Village Center. That's a Salvadorian cross. And so I see this theology of glory here in the United States. For us, the cross, as Germano said, is the center. Because the cross is, what is cross? It's suffering. It's in the cross, Jesus Christ killed the dead. Understand this? And in our continent, 25 million kids until 3 years die by hunger every year. And so the cross is the center element in the theology of liberation, because in the cross we find, in the suffering of the people, we find Christ suffering with us and crying with us and saying, there is another way, there is a resurrection, there is salvation for you, there is grace for you. Okay, but that's our faith. From the cross is built our faith and our hope and our dreams. But
for us Lutherans, all this cross theology is not new at all. But since in Latin America, 90% of the population is Catholic, we can notice that there is a real big difference in the theology being formulated during the last 20 years in Latin America, especially because of this emphasis of the Catholic theologians on the cross. Because the perception I have is that they, since the 1500s, when they came, they have been preaching only theology of glory and the Christ coming in glory with the sword and the cross, okay? And a Christ who was in agreement with the powerful, and this was the image of a Christ in glory was brought also a heavenly compensation for all the suffering on earth, and this is the kind of Christ being preached during the last centuries in Latin America, and this new emphasis now on the cross means that. There is a cross, but there is also resurrection, and that the suffering and pain people are going through is not final, that there is resurrection and there is hope. And so what is going on now is a situation of cross, but there is always resurrection, and this is the hope people bring.
And another point that I would like to say, that even liberation theology says that the good news, that the salvation, that the kingdom of God come through the poor, that the poor are the agent of salvation. They are not saying that the poor are saints. Mm-hmm. They don't have sin. What they are signs of the kingdom. What we have experienced now in history are only signs of the kingdom. It's not the realization of the kingdom. The kingdom will come. But we need to struggle to put more signs of this kingdom right now here in our history, because what happened, as Mona said, the preaching was also always said, don't worry, you are suffering here, but when you go to heaven, you will have a better life. All the suffering that you had here, you transform in joy. So it's very present the cross and the emphasis on the resurrection, and pointing that the human being is the nature of the human being is sinful, but not as as the first old America and North America and Europe do, where they started seeing because the human nature is sinful, we can't do nothing, because always what we are doing is something that will not produce the good fruit that we are expecting. We are saying, we know that we are sinful, but we will try to do something. Because the situation that we have here in Latin America is so painful that if you don't do nothing, you are in agreement with the situation that are killing a lot of people.
An important movement after the Reformation was a renewal movement in Europe, the Pietist movement, which was a lay movement which brought people together in prayer groups. It seemed to me that Pietism turned inward on the soul, and liberation theology seems to turn outward to the world. How do you account for are there any similarities and differences between Pietism, because North American theology has been strongly influenced by this Pietism?
When I was studying Pietism, I always thought that most of the Pentecostal movements had their base in Pietism, and how wrong that was, because it's something completely different. And I was amazed in seeing that Pietism was as much involved in any in social action as it was concerning the, as you said, the inwards and the soul. Because just remember all the emphasis on schools they have, and all the perspective of mission and what they try to propagate news. Nowadays we would question the way they did it, because we have different perspectives about the relationship of different cultures and so on. We might question this, but I think our dialogue or our disagreement nowadays is not exactly between liberation theology and Pietism, but it's mainly about a completely different branch of theology, which are the Pentecostal churches. And this has been a main problem in Brazil. And I don't associate the Pentecostal churches with Pietism at all, because it's completely different. But why I say that's a problem, because it's exactly that this kind of churches preach what we are talking against, which is they try to alienate people completely out of their environment, saying that you just work hard, you just continue suffering, because once you go to heaven, you'll have the best place you can imagine. And we know that it's this kind of theology, what kind of background it has, and how it simply tries to maintain the whole situation and keep the powerful more powerful and the rich richer, and keep the poor and oppressed even more, even worse than they are. So I think it's completely different.
But it's interesting to add here that among the Protestants, the most of the pastors or theologians who are now theologians or pastors tied to the movement of liberation were before Pietism in the EU. But the Pietists, they want to solve the problems, solving one from all, one individual ways. And what we discovered and what we believe is that you have rather to change the structures of the society. In the movement, changing people. These people try to change the structures of the society. because changing individuals, you will never change, make this big change that we have to make in our continent, and also here in the United States, because always we know that always more people are dying by hunger, by cold here in the United States also, because they are so poor that they cannot make it.
Yeah, something I'd just like to add this is that I think really perfect that said is that we do not exclude spirituality at all, but what we try to do is to relate our spiritual life with our daily life. And so, for example, in our prayers, we try to connect the experiences we are having in our environment. We try to relate it to our faith. Taking the sacraments, for example, we try to relate during the Holy Communion that we are celebrating a day where all people will have food in abundance. And we are suffering now because there are so many without it. And so it means giving different or new perspectives or adding new perspectives to theology. And in our singing, for example, singing, by the way, has meant a lot in the whole struggle for survival in Latin America. And in our singing, we cry our pain, but we also celebrate our hope. So it's the same spirituality, but it tries to relate the life of the simple people.
Yeah.
So in South America, like say Brazil, there's the two sides, the liberation theology versus the old guard, like say the Catholic priests. And, are they like at odds with each other, or is the official church position with Liberation Society, or is it theology, or is it against it?
Well, you will find this kind of conflict in every country, in every place. You will find some people trying to do something new, some theologians trying in some communities, based communities, trying to do a different way. And you will have some bishops that will always, in the Catholic Church, and always try to stop this kind of movement. But what is very important to know, and what is supporting and giving a more growth of the liberation theology, is that it's not you can find liberation movements that use liberation theology in every church in Latin America, Catholic, Lutheran, Methodist, and this gives to the movement a big support, because it's not based only in one church. They are spread all over the churches, and so it's very difficult. You can, for example, you can have some tentatives to stop the movement, like the Pope did, condemning a theologian from Brazil, Leonardo Boff, for 1 year of silence. But it didn't stop the base communities to formulate their theology, and the other churches and the other movements in the other churches to growing. And so it's very important, this connection, this ecumenical perspective of liberation theology. They can struggle together against the ones that try to stop them.
And it's important also to say, I was saying in the beginning, before we start the session, that we don't think that the theology is liberating somebody or something. Jesus Christ liberates us. We have it very clear. The theology is the expression of the experience of liberated people trying to liberate the unjust structures in which we are living. That's very important to say that. Somebody think, oh, that's not a Christian. Where is God in this theology? God is the first. God is in the God is what means theology. But why? Oh, because we are. Why? Because we are doing theology in a context of liberation. We call this theology is called theology of liberation or liberations theology. But it's very important to say that for us, that is not the theology that is going to liberate somebody or something.
Tonight you brought up the subject of when your first impressions on coming to the village, and I think that is a very good way for us to look at it as Americans or North Americanos. I certainly didn't see the village the way you saw it, where you didn't see the cross. And when you did see the cross, it was a Central American cross. It wasn't an American cross. And I was challenged, actually on a videotape by a mission carried out in church by a Catholic priest, who said, "You have your own suffering in the United States." And I did spend a couple of weeks in Honduras, and mixed both with some very poor people and also mixed with some middle class, upper middle class people. And I could see the suffering very clearly there. The starvation, the malnutrition, the lack of education, the lack of public health, and so forth. But these middle class people that I talked with were denying that it existed. And they lived right there. And what I would like to challenge the people in this room is what you're saying is that we aren't seeing our own suffering. You know, our own chemical dependency that touches everybody's lives in this room. Teenage suicide, divorce. We have tremendous suffering in our society. We close our eyes, as do the middle class of Central America and South America. And I think you bring that challenge home to us, very much so, as well.
Or even going farther, because the amount of people in the United States living in conditions beyond what is called poverty is increasing dramatically. And I know because my husband and I, we are coming from the Chicago area, and just during the last winter, how many people were, you know, died just because they were homeless.
And I think
this is a big challenge, yeah. Because it really touches North American society, and something we didn't know, because the impression we have from the United States that everybody's middle class. So it was a big shock for us too.
And I think your point exactly. It's very easy for everyone to see the problems far away. No. See in South Africa, see in Central America, but when it comes to see it in right now, no, in your community, in your country, it's very difficult. And I think people, even people in Latin America, also suffer with this. And this is not easy to make the conversion, you know, to begin to see, to try to be, to see their own problems in their community, in their nation. Mm-hmm. But it's much easier to go farther and say, oh, we are in the position to, now we don't have problems here, we can help them with that.
Excuse me, America, the film Selma Lukumar points that out dramatically.
What?
Excuse me, America,
oh.
The film by Selma Lukumar points that out. And it's available probably in every city in the United States. So.
I think too that you help us, at least to me, you remind us that we do have the right to vote here if we take advantage of it. And unfortunately, right now we have a president who also can't see poverty, or who says it doesn't exist, or if they would just go get the help, you know. I mean, and I think he really believes that. I honestly do. I don't think he does see it, which is very unfortunate. But at least we have the chance to vote and try to change our system. And although if you read the voting statistics in the United States, they're apathetic. I mean, half of the people don't vote who have a chance to vote. And is your system also a democratic system in Brazil? Can you vote?
Well, for example, not yet. We can vote for some levels. We can vote for to elect our representatives in the state level and the federal level. But they can't vote for president. Yeah, the last election for president was in 61. And so the next election for president, it depends of a new constitution that will start writing it now in next November. And we don't know, it will be in 89 or 91. So in some level we have some conditions to vote. But the problem was and is that the ones that put themselves or show themselves to be elected are always from the same elite. And so during many years, only the same kind of people were elected, and they would make the same kind of laws, and always looking for their interest. And what I think the base communities did, not only the base community, but the whole popular movement did, was that they raised the question that what kind of people we have in Congress. And they discovered that it was only the same kind of people, and they began to start why we can't have someone that represents our interests in Congress. Because we are the majority, we are the workers, we are the ones that produce the things that are necessary to live. And so in 79, after a lot of discussion, a new party started in Brazil called Partido dos Trabalhadores. The translation would be the Workers' Party, but it's not a lot of people immediately make connection with the Workers' Party in England. It's completely different. It's a party that's not built in the same traditional way that the other parties are built, from the top to the bottom. They are trying really to be a very democratic party. All the decisions are made, go through from the base to the bottom. It's very difficult. They have a lot of discussion to make a resolution, but they are trying to do something different. And I think this is, and people, this party elected some representatives in some states, and we have some of them also in the Congress. And so, it's something new that is happening.
Something else very important, just adding, Jamon, is the fact that the base humanists have had alternative media, alternative news to communicate to the people, telling about the corruption of the government. You know, just the fact of having election doesn't mean that it's a democracy, because you have had news from the Filipino government and how things are well done there. It's exactly the same in Brazil. And the base humanities, they try to raise this consciousness that the people in power are not always the best kind of people to represent us, but they keep themselves in power because they are corrupted and they are sending the money, all their money, they are exploiting the poor people and sending it to their bank accounts in Switzerland, for example. And spreading this news, because the government controls all the media in the country, and so they never, never allow anybody to say it in the newspapers, in the radio, or the TV. So you have to have alternative information for the people, and I think base communities have done this also.
Yeah.
Could you give a brief description of what happens in a typical base community meeting, particularly in the use of the Bible?
Yeah. When we gather as base community, we have our songs, we have our praise, and opening the Bible, who can't read, and then reads the text, or we share the reading, and then we have some questions that we usually make. For example, one of the questions is to who Jesus Christ is speaking. For example, who is the with who Jesus Christ is speaking. Other question, then we speak about this. Other question very used is who is beneficiated by what Jesus says. And other question, who is against what Jesus says? And then another question, why they are against? What kind of interest Jesus is defending? What kind of interest the people who were against Jesus were defending? And then the last question, what we can do? So usually it works. It's very simple. It's like here we are sitting around and with the guitar and not with probes and all. Yes.
How often does the base community meet, and how long are the meetings?
Well, usually once a week. There's no law or you know.
Is that in addition to a Sunday, you know, church service?
Usually, yes.
Yeah, this is, I think, you raised a good, very good question. Even the base, if the base communities, you met every week, maybe 15, 20 people, it's not that they are now a little church separated from the other church. They will attend regularly the Sunday service. I can give you a good example. I did my internship in the Northeast, and I worked with some base communities. And so I work in a shanty town, and every Saturday night we had our meetings. And every Saturday night in a different home. And sometimes only the walk from one place to another was teaching us something. Because you need to walk in a small path without electricity. The sanitary system was running, and sometimes you put your foot into them. And then people will realize, why we need to live in this condition? Because some people in the city, they have electricity, they have pavement. And we are, when we work much or as much them as them, because we need sometimes to work at 5 or 4 o'clock in the morning, travel 2 or 3 hours by bus, then work 4 hours, 8 hours or more, and travel again back home. So this is a very sense of being a community. They are interrelated. Every base community will have contact with each other, and they can share their experiences or their discoveries in the Sunday service. For them, in this community, the priest was very open to the base community, and sometimes he only, because he was a Catholic, they have some problems. The only office or the only thing that he did was to consecrate the elements, but the sermon who did was the base community, because they could share what they discovered of the text. Sometimes with they dramatize a text, or they will come with some different interpretation, or some of the people would pray, would give the sermon. And so it's very interactive.
Do base communities generally choose the texts that are for that week, or do you just where, you know?
Oh, it can vary. Some you choose the text that is, you know, for the week, or if they have a special need, they will choose something different. Or sometimes the whole community will discuss during 1 month, for example, a theme, and so they will choose some appropriate text. It can vary from place to place.
Essentially, the base communities that are located in the barrio.
Yeah.
Well, and only there, or
it depends. I think the both German and Cali and have experience mostly in the city. But I had my internship in the rural area, and so and Ruth also visited some places in the rural area, and this is different. it follows the same pattern when it comes to the main point, for example, being the Bible and so on. But the discussion is completely different because it involves land and the whole discussion about reform, agrarian reform in Brazil. And because 80% of the land is owned by 10% of the population or something like that, 10-15% of the population, and there are 15 million farmers without land. And it's a big discussion going on. And I would say that the violence of the regime has been mostly directed in the rural area against the rural-based communities, because it's a big issue going on right now in Brazil.
Is that one of the reasons for meeting in different people's homes all the time, is to avoid the persecution?
There's no way of avoiding persecution, because the simple fact of belonging to a community and challenging color is being asked to be a martyr.
Does the base community also involved in healthcare in any way, or in the child in the daycare work environment?
Well, not directly as base community, but the conscious that grows in these discussions lead the people to make it. My experience, for example, in my town, little town in Brazil, a little experience, but they start a soup. I have some two pictures. A soup, yes, for we believe, we don't know exactly how many people eat or drink from this soup, but because they oh no,
10 minutes
before, 10 minutes. They come with the pots, the huh? No, the big pots, and take it home. And then we don't know how many eat at home. Maybe they add more water and more bread and maybe a little bigger. Okay, but they start with this movement. Our church, which is middle class, we give all the ingredients, all the food, and they cook. But the people of the bairro cook it and distribute it. They start, I got a letter that they start now this a kind of children care. Mothers, we have many servants in Brazil. So the women go to the houses or middle class or from the rich to work and clean and make the work that the fine ladies want to do. And so when one goes, then the other keep at home and take care of the children. So the other day, this one goes and the other keep home. And this movement start in the discussions that we created in this basic community. 2 years ago, we didn't have anything of that. We didn't have roads, streets, and electric light, and the sanitarian system. And now all this is beginning to come to this bike.
Were there? Yeah.
In Esteio, Rio Grande do Sul.
Were there base camps or base whatever meetings in the Philippines? Did liberation theology play an element? Do you think? I know land reform was a big concern in the Philippines too. You comment on that? Was there a movement in the Philippines?
Yes.
Yeah, they have a strong movement, but I personally don't have a lot of information about how much it did or it helped in the process. I think, yeah, they should have.
Something which is not very common, it's not a common knowledge, is that in different continents that there are different liberation theologies. We talk about Latin American liberation theology, and it is very similar to the liberation theology of South Africa, and which is also very similar to the people's theology in Korea, for example. And there are different liberation theologies going on, and it's, I think it's a reason to be happy about that. And the points of main points of each theology are similar to each other.
About this issue, the magazine called The Other Side, we have in the lecture room, yes, The Other Side, the issue from April, I guess, or May, has many sheets about this, what happened in the Philippines. Very interesting, good material. Yes. Okay. we thank you.
Awesome.